Well, welcome back to Side 2 of the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for July 2011. Well, we had to cut off Mark Dernberger as we reached the end of our cassette, but he's got a lot more, so stay tuned for Mark and more of Cleveland, Ohio Radio. Then we'll switch right over to Phil Wayne as he has a special edition of the 4th of July Market Scope. So stick with us, friends.
Now to get back to the famous 1220, and we have to learn about WHK and WHKW and revisit WKNR and WGAR. Now hang on. What's known today as WHKW signed on as WDBK in 1924, became WFJC in 1927, moved to Akron, then back to Cleveland, merging with WCSO in 1930 to come on the air as WGAR, 500 watts at 1450. While there, they tried for 560, 890, and 1180 to no avail. In 1941, WGAR went to 1480 and finally to 1220, where in 1957 they upped the ante to 50 kilowatts full-time directional night. In the 70s, GAR did adult contemporary. Their most famous alumni were Jack Parr and Don Imus. For a while, they simulcast with WGAR-FM, and then in 1990, the AM was sold and reemerged as WKNR. We told you earlier about WKNR's efforts and frustrations in the Major League sports arena, and we know that WKNR was sold to Salem in 2000. So, okay, that's all the simple stuff. In 2001, a seven-way frequency swap occurred involving four stations in Cleveland. Salem moved the WHK call and religious format from 1420 to 1220. As we know, the WKNR calls and sports talk format went from 1220 to 850, and the vacated 1420 frequency was rebranded WCLV with the adult standard format that had been on 850. I am not making this up, folks. The idea on 1220 changed again on April 13, 2005, to WHKW, after Salem reacquired the 1420 AM facility and placed the WHK calls on its original frequency. More on WHK in a moment, but first we have to tackle 1260, where today WWMK does children's programming, 5 kilowatts day one at night, serving the catfish in Lake Erie. The station began in 1950 as WDOK and tried various formats, including ethnic and classical music. In 1965, the station became WIXY, W-I-X-Y, billing itself as WIXY 1260, and it began to dominate top 40 in Cleveland. But with the emergence of FM radio, the era of AM Top 40 drew to a close. In 1976, WIXY became WMGC, or Magic, and the format switched to adult rock. The station adopted the slogan, Get Your Rock Soft, which raised some eyebrows when it appeared in ads and billboards around town. That format lasted about 3 years. Then in 1979, the station became WBBG, Wibbage, and switched to talk radio. Wibbage's talking never caught on, so the station turned to an oldies format briefly before finding success with a big band-based music format. WBBG's call letters originally stood for Boys from Bowling Green and soon took the meaning Big Band Grandstand. Enter Giant J-Core to mess things up. After letting the station slide into the wastebasket, J-Core sold Wibbage and the new owners brought in a Christian format as WRDZ. Back in 1988, they were able to increase day power to 10,000 watts. Then they sold to a Catholic broadcaster who changed the call letters to WMIH, the first Catholic radio station in the country. But the station didn't do well financially, and when Disney came to town, they sold the operation. In 1998, Radio Disney appeared in Cleveland on 1260 as WWMK. I bet they would have liked to resurrect the WRDZ call letters, but they had been moved to LaGrange, Illinois. And now to 1300 and WJMO with gospel music. JMO went on the air in 1947 as a daytime-only station at 1540, powered 1,000 watts. Then a new owner came to town and bought the full-time 1490 frequency, moving WJMO to the channel in the 1960s. WJMO was the focus of race-oriented controversy. Some of its principals were investigated for corrupt practices. In 1993, through an ownership change, WJMO's new owners were the first African-Americans with a significant ownership position in Cleveland radio. And then in 1998, Giant Chancellor Media bought the station along with several others, including WRMR 850. As Chancellor merged to become Clear Channel, they spun off WJMO, and the newly purchased station moved from its longtime R&B format to gospel music, still on 1490. In 2007, the station's owners swapped the format and call letters with WERE and moved WJMO to 1300. WERE appeared on 1490, and today they're doing talk on this graveyard frequency. 1350 has had several calls. The station traces its history to WADC, Akron's second station, on again, off again in the 20s, finally on for good in 1925 on 1160, moved to 1010, 1260, and 1320 by 1928. Then in 1941, they were assigned to 1350, still as WADC. In 1965, that station became WSLR, known as Whistler 1350, doing country. In 1994, they tried Urban Contemporary as WTOU, The Touch. 5 years later, they were in sports. That lasted until 2005, when they switched to WARF and tried Liberal Talk Radio as Radio Free Ohio. By 2007, they were doing sports, and that's where they are today, with 5,000 watts full-time directional night. And that takes us to WHK, back on 1420, at least they were when we prepared this information. WHK began on July 26, 1921, when experimental station 8ACS signed on a wavelength of 200 meters. That translates to a frequency of 1,500 kilohertz. By 1922, licensees were barred from broadcasting on 200 meters, so the owners applied for a commercial license and received the call WHK in 1922 on 360 meters, 833 kilocycles. They moved to 1100, 1130, 1390, and on 1390 were able to upgrade to 5,000 watts full-time. Narba 1941 moved WHK to 1420. The FCC records show that WHK wasn't opposed to technical experimentation. In 1930, they were allowed to try AM synchronization tests on 860, along with WABC, now WCBS, and with WBOQ and WKBW. And in 1938, they were granted authority for facsimile transmissions. WHK was sold in 1958, and the new owners soon adopted a rock and roll top 40 format. By the early 1960s, WHK was a top 40 powerhouse, adopting the slogan Color Radio and Color Channel 14. Late in 1967, WHK stopped rocking to become the Good Life station, with easy listening music and phone-in shows aimed at older listeners. Possibly the biggest reason for the format change at WHK was the pressure put on the station by WKSY 1260. WHK was sold again in 1972. They dropped the beautiful music and tried a modified top format briefly called Cover Hits. When that didn't work, they settled on country music in 1974. That lasted 10 years. Don Imus returned to Cleveland in 1978 to do afternoon drive on HK, one of the few times that he would ever host a non-morning drive position in his entire career. Imus, by the way, had previously had a morning show on WGAR, ending in 1971. He lasted at WHK until September 1979, when he returned to WNBC in New York. Seeking to recapture its past glory, WHK returned to a nostalgic 1950s and 60s Top 40 music format in 1984, using the designation 14K WHK Solid Gold. It became the first oldies formatted station in Cleveland. But another sale happened. In 1994, WHK adopted a sports talk format. Then another sale to Salem. Salem Communications eliminated all local programming during the transition and adopted a religious format as The Word in August 1997. In that seven-way radio swap of 2001, WHK moved to 1220, previously occupied by WKNR that went to 850. The 1420 location held by WCLV, as we said. They picked up the adult standards format previously held on 850. WCLV on 1420 failed to establish a young enough audience to attract major advertisers, and 1420 went back to Salem. The call letters were restored to WHK on April 5th, 2005, introducing a conservative talk format. And by golly, that's enough. A long-winded and short-winded Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service. That's our state of the stations in Cleveland. From time to time, we'll continue these reports. Next month, it's our Midsummer Madness, and then we'll be reporting from the road. And until we see you in 30 days, thanks for listening, and good listening, DXers. National Radio Club.
IDXers, welcome to a very patriotic market scope for July 2011. Foreign shores are the market for this month, and we welcome Tom Whetston to explain.
And thank you very much. The 4th of July is coming. Let's take a look at radio for the troops. Suddenly, it's 1945.
A.F.N. Bremen is a member of the American Forces Network of the Armed Forces Radio Service and is a branch of the Troop Information and Education Service, United States Army.
2012 is the 70th anniversary of the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service. For a lot of Americans, Armed Forces Radio begins and ends with Good Morning Vietnam.
This is the American Forces Vietnam Network.
There's part of the story, but there was a lot more. During World War II, GIs would put their makeshift radio stations on the air. Depending on the situation, these could be anything from a record player being fed into a low-power transmitter to a full broadcast station. The military saw the value in morale and being able to get information out, but something more formal was needed. Our radio stations were pulled together as the Armed Forces Radio Service. The challenges were different depending on the location. In Europe, initially, we were transmitting our programming from England and the studios of the BBC. In the Pacific, the Mosquito Network bounced from island to island. At the end of World War II, we took over standing stations in Japan and Germany.
WVTR is on the air, broadcasting from our mobile van 10 kilometers northeast of downtown Tokyo. This is Army Sergeant Lloyd Green.
One of the German stations, a blowtorch with over 150,000 watts. AFRS, the world's largest radio network. At one time or another, with stations in almost every country. China, India, Austria, France, Trinidad. Wherever there were soldiers, sailors, or Marines, there was an AFRS station. For programming, Hollywood opened their gates and made the biggest stars available to entertain the troops in special programs that were never broadcast in the United States.
Hey there, gang. Here comes another star-studded Taffy Pullen hayride featuring your favorite performers as per your request to command performance, Armed Forces Radio, Los Angeles, USA. And tonight, the first sergeant in charge of entertainment is one of Hollywood's loveliest stars. She's blonde, she's beautiful, and she's standing here at the microphone on the world's most gorgeous legs, Betty Grable.
The GI Journal goes to press. Men, throughout the ages, humor has come a long, long way. And now here's a man who's going to send it all the way back to the beginning. Your editor-in-chief of this edition, Kay Kaiser.
Well, howdy, man. How are y'all?
Hi, you fellas. This is G.I. Jill with G.I. Jive, ably assisted by my pal, the AEF Jukebox, and four bands, Woody Herman, Stan Kenton, Glenn Miller, and Benny Goodman. Lots of requests are about to be answered, so here's hoping that your favorite is on today's Jive session.
The radio networks made their lineups available for rebroadcast without commercials. The culture of America is a patchwork quilt of cultures. For many soldiers, this was their first experience with other styles of music. For myself, the record libraries were an amazing thing. The stations had decades of every form of popular music from the original releases. Major Glenn Miller, Spade Cooley, the NBC Symphony. And during World War II, the majority of the music for the DJ shows were drawn from radio broadcasts and special recording sessions. The stations always seemed to save random network broadcasts. It would take years just to figure out what was there. In the 1950s, television became part of the mix, and it was the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service. I was a part of it in the 70s and 80s. After a 10-week course at the Defense Information School, I was a trained DJ, newspaper writer, and television professional. I was off to AFKN in South Korea, reading news that was networked to all of the local stations, and then spending the rest of my time at one of those stations, a handful of miles from the DMZ with the infantry. After that, 3 years with the Southern Command Network in the Panama Canal Zone, again in the infantry. There was something about sometimes schlepping a rifle on a road march that kind of helped to keep the listener in focus. We broadcast 24 hours a day on the radio. We played all kinds of music on the AM station and mostly orchestral music on the FM. I was 24 years old, programming the network, doing mornings, learning by doing.
It's 8:30 on SCN. Good evening, I'm Tom Whetston, and as everyone has heard by now, former Beatle John Lennon was shot dead in front of his apartment building in New York. Tonight on Evening on the Isthmus, we're going to celebrate the life of John Lennon.
The years go by, and I miss the camaraderie. the personalities, the made-for-AFRTS. Many people from the network went on to successful careers in civilian broadcasting. Others stayed until they retired. Some left broadcasting. We shared something hard to describe. But by then, the network programs were mostly DJ shows, with top Los Angeles talent. Wolfman Jack, Charlie Tuna, and the rest giving their talent and being heard worldwide.
Charlie Tuna, coming back at you for another 60 minutes in the radio. I was just considering, I don't think I could ever become a vegetarian. I mean, who can sit down to candlelight, a glass of superb red wine, pick up a knife and fork, and then salivate over a fillet of soybean? Of course, it might be the roast pork we had last night. May it rest in grease.
The wolf just keeps on coming.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Mike, your girlfriend just called. She wants to know where you keep the fire extinguisher. Speaking of hot times around the house, we go with it with Devo.
Welcome to a Tuesday happening on Armed Forces Radio. I'm the Bynum, rolling in here, putting it together for you. And music for all my brothers and sisters in Saudi Arabia and in Panama. Okay? All right. Music from Peebo Bryson, Roberta Flack. They have a brand new album that's incredible. Saw them in a concert recently. It was just great. OJ's Get Things Started. I like the attitude. It's like Love Train and all of that good stuff. It's Put Our Heads Together. Anita Baker, Rick James with that smash cold-blooded One Way. Lou Rawls with Something New. And Free Time with Sexual Harassment. All happen right here.
Hello there. Bye-bye. Hi, I'm Gene Price. And as we open up today's episode of the Gene Price Country World Show, we find Barbara Mandrell sleeping single in a double bed. I know, it is shocking, isn't it? Well, here she is right now.
Hi, this is Roger Carroll, and I play records. Again from Hollywood, we are celebrating a Monday. Won't you join us for the best sounds in town?
That system continued until 1996 and the beginning of satellite delivery. AFRTS today continues bringing America to the world. With stations in Germany and Korea, Iraq, Afghanistan, the ships at sea are wherever needed. The troops get multiple channels with their favorite music or other programming all day long. So the equipment changes. But the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service will always be the voice of home. If you're interested in more information about AFRTS, I have a blog at afrtsarchive.blogspot.com. That's afrtsarchive.blogspot.com, where I try to keep the memories alive. I'm former Army Specialist Tom Whetston. Thanks for listening.
Serve our nation, word of the people day by day, evenings filled with pleasant listening, home is not so far away, hear the voice of home, the sound of America, on AFRT.
Thanks, Tom, for a fascinating look back at Armed Forces Radio's 70 years of broadcasting. Next month, Missouri is our destination. Remember, MarketScope needs your help to bring you these radio profiles every month. If you'd like to help, send your station recordings and optional commentary to me, Phil Wayne, at 313 Spring Street, Upper Sandusky, Ohio, 43351, 1652. You don't have to do a tight professional job like Tom did. Whatever you provide will be appreciated by the membership. Like the Hallmark folks might say, may something barbecued be in your 4th of July. Now, here are the musings from the members.
Present WIBC.
Beer!
Don't look now, but I think we're being followed. Way back there, don't you see we're being followed?
What are they doing back there?
Well, I don't care.
March on Groundhog's Day. Better off if they marched on Leap Year. Oh, this is not a parade. This is a riot. Sounds like an earthquake in a shoe store.
Good evening, everyone. It's 8:30 here on June the 4th. And this is Joe Schwab from Richmond, Virginia, with a brief note about WHAN up in Ashland on 1430. They now have an FM translator on 102.9. They barely get in here in Chesterfield, which is, maybe about 15 or 20 miles away from Ashland. There's also another translator in 103.1, so that kind of steps on it. But I did pick it up yesterday, and they said so in their legal ID, so it is official. WHAN 1430 has a translator on 102.9. 73s, and best wishes, everyone, from Richmond.
Hi, DX Audio Service members. Mike Dukin calling from Hayward, Wisconsin, and I forgot to mention the last time I called that most importantly to me, during the month of May, my wife Linda and I celebrated our 11th anniversary of domestic and marital bliss. But I do have a DX question that I'd like to ask. Most of the time I can figure out these things for myself, but this one got me. On 1550 under CBE in Windsor, I'm picking up a station in Spanish. I think they call it these days regional Mexican. So I don't know where this station is. I thought it might be Jacksonville, Illinois, but then again, I'm not sure. So if Fred or Mark can help me out on this question, well, that would be greatly appreciated. And by the way, I just renewed my subscription for another year of great listening pleasure from the DX Audio Service. Thank you very much, 73, and good DX.
Well, good evening, everyone. It's about 7 o'clock here on June the 10th, 2011, and I'm Joe Schwab here in Richmond, Virginia, and I definitely want to compliment both you, Fred, and you, Mark, for your excellent job. First of all, I've never heard a definitive explanation of the FM skip like you gave, Fred. It was truly fascinating. I've wondered that for years and did not know who to ask that particular question of. Now, the only thing I'm wondering is what determines what direction the skip comes from. I noticed on a Wednesday morning I got one from Washington, and a Tuesday morning I got one from the East. As far as you're concerned, Mark, I definitely want you to keep up those columns of the state of station. I know that is a lot of work to do, but it is tremendously revealing and greatly appreciate it. I often think about you when I listen to the Minnesota Twins games on the satellite radio. I wonder what all you had to do to get the broadcasting center built, and wonder if you still have any engineering involvement with the Minnesota Twins network and what type of consulting you do. Anyway, all of you are greatly appreciated, so don't ever think that we don't, because the more time goes on, the more interesting the magazine gets. I always read it at least to the same day I get it, or certainly the next day, and sometimes several times in 1 month if it's really fascinating and absorbing. So 73s and keep up the good work.
Hello, fellow DXers. Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. During a recent trip to Meridian, Mississippi, I picked up a great station on 1520 in Sykeston, Missouri, and they were really playing the country classics. They also carried Chicago Cubs baseball. I don't know why, because being in Missouri where you've got St. Louis and Kansas City, I would think they would have carried one of those teams. Our station here, CKPC, is doing a good job with country music, but they're doing a poor job with local news, especially on weekends. You don't get any local news or weather after noon on Saturday or Sunday. Everything is voice-tracked, and I just don't think that's right. I think the local people deserve a better break than what they're getting on that.
And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. And if you'd like to muse, just give us a call at 419-741-0205. That's 419-741-0205, 24 hours a day for DX Audio Service members only. And keep it brief and to the point so everyone has a chance to speak. Speaking of brief, we've got this message, and then we'll be back with more of the DX Audio Service.
This year, we're going to Omaha. Wow! Which used to be the call letters on 590. Ernie and the Big O team invite you to this year's joint get-together of the NRC and the WTFDA at the Comfort Inn & Suites. Our convention begins on Thursday, October 13th. For more info, simply log on to nrcdxas.org and click on the link for the convention. See you in Warren Buffett's hometown for the 78th annual NRC convention.
You're listening to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service.
Time now for the DXers Toolbox, written by Sean Axelrod of Winnipeg, Manitoba. Greetings once again from the heart of the continent, and welcome to the DX Toolbox column number 28. This month, we will look at favorite receivers. Here is what fellow members have to say. First, from Mark DiLorenzo of South Dennis on Cape Cod in Massachusetts. The favorite receiver I have used is the Perseus because of its ability to record the entire medium wave band, its spectrum analyzer that enables the user to see the signals before taking the time to listen, its variable bandwidth, and no doubt a few functions I haven't even discovered yet. The favorite receiver I have owned is my current receiver, the JRC NRD525. Because of its excellent combination of sensitivity, selectivity, digital readout, 200 memories, direct keypad entry, USB, LSB, and CW modes, and notch filter to eliminate hits. From our publisher, Fred Vobey, it's really a toss-up, but I'll go with a GE Super Radio 3. Although it's not a DX machine, it's served me well in urban areas as well as camping trips in Upper Michigan and Canada. The one factor I love the best is the quality of audio in the wide band mode. It makes the audio very intelligible, and music sounds great. In the narrow mode, I've been able to get 1160 Chicago with a local 1150 on. The only drawback is the large skirts on the front end, which makes it a pain to deal with an adjacent channel IBOC station, or co-channel. But overall, this is my favorite radio. If I want a seriously DX, then I turn to the tried-and-true Sony 2010, my number two. Wayne Heinen from Aurora, Colorado said, "Hands down, my Drake R8B, my trusty sidekick since my wife bought it as a birthday present for me for my 53rd birthday 8 years ago." Jim Renfrew stepped up to the DX pulpit with a good amount of information. "I didn't obey your rules and answered more expansively. Favorite receivers, my first, Heathkit GR81, a total whistle box that my dad and I built when I was about 13, but my first DX machine. I later graduated to a DX100, realistic or similar, I can't remember, then the Sony 2001, until the buttons gave out, and then the Sony 2010s. I had button problems there, too. Most impressive, the Hammerland HQ180. After having read in DX News for years that the most prolific DXers use this, I finally bought one around 1983. Probably the finest analog DX machine ever. This is one hefty unit, though not nearly the poundage of the HQ150 I once had, not easily transported to other locations. It warms up the room with all the tubes, and for the first time gave me the opportunity to fine-tune splits with the Q multiplier. The most useful receiver, the Drake R8B, my current receiver. 10 kHz to 30 MHz range, 1,000 memories, passband, notch, USB, LSB, tunes to the 100th kilohertz. And did I mention the 1,000 memories? The Drake R8 I bought from Mark Connolly is still on hand, but not as useful with only 100 memories. I have set up the R8B so I can easily tune through 10 kHz and 9 kHz channels with a step button. One memory button allows a quick toggle between two frequencies, which really helps comparison with parallels. It's a tabletop receiver, but much easier to transport than the old Hammerland. So it goes with me to Newfoundland in a metal case each time. Beyond impressive, the Perseus SDR. This is an incredible unit, about the size of a paperback book and negligible weight. It doesn't look like a radio, but when you add an antenna and attach it to a computer, all the controls are on the computer screen. All kinds of bells and whistles to play with to separate weak signals from the QRM. Readout is to the 1,000th kilohertz. The waterfall feature shows signals as bright lines, and you can zoom to see a visible separation between dominant and off-channel weak signals. Aside from being an incredible receiver, it also has the capacity to record 1,600 kilohertz wide files that can be reviewed later. allowing the user to tune up and down the entire long wave and medium wave dial within that save file at a later time. It can also be used for short wave, and with an additional unit, can do the same 1600 kilohertz width on FM. That's about 6 FM channels. In reviewing just a few of the files from Newfoundland, I was able to find at least 30 new Iranian stations by nailing the interval signal that would have escaped me in real time, and I'm looking forward to reviewing the files that cover the Indian sign-on and late-morning TPs. The downside to the Perseus's recording ability is that it takes forever to go through those files, so not the best option for daily DXing, but a gold mine for reviewing material after a de-expedition to some exotic locale. From Sean, the Drake R8A, purchased 14 years ago. I've only used it for AM broadcast band DXing. I've used the radio inside from 120 volts AC and powered from 12 volts in a car at nearby parks. Its major feature, ease of tuning and stability compared to my old tube sets. Almost always set on 2.3 kHz bandwidth in either lower sideband or upper sideband, depending on interference. Dual VFOs and antennas. One for broadcast band with quantum loop, the second set up for WWV at 5 MHz or 10 MHz with a separate 40-foot long wire antenna. This feature allows rapid switching between BCB and WWV for timestamping recordings with one push of a button. Excellent sensitivity and selectivity. I use the two timer functions daily. Line output used for recording, recently with a new digital Vox-operated recorder. Some undesirable features. I don't use or need all the memory channels. Would desire instead the space and chips were used for many more timer on-off functions. A backlighted button panel would be very helpful to use radio in dark or dimly lit settings. Problems. The radio was sent back to Drake for a noise blanker issue in 2003. I never used this feature, but it began to fail and started blanking intermittently and then all the time, causing badly distorted audio. Drake fixed the problem by replacing some chips and a crystal. Finally, from Tom Jasinski of Joliet, Illinois. I will have to go with my good old ICOM ICR70. I bought this receiver in September 1983 and have used it regularly since then. I have added some great mods over the years, including the PLAM board. This works like a synchronous detector on my Drake R8, but works in upper sideband or lower sideband, so it is much more sensitive and is not affected by changing frequencies. This radio has logged a lot of countries from long wave on through 30 MHz. The receiver is very stable, and with the PLAM board, it is incredibly sensitive, especially with the FL44A narrow single sideband filter. It will, in many cases, outperform the Drake R8, all the audio is not as good as the Drake. For an all-around classic radio, the ICR70 is the one for me. That's all from the DXers Toolbox this month. I'm Bruce Winkleman for the DX Audio Service.
HD Radio, is it worth the effort? By Guy Wire in Radio World News Magazine. It's been several years since your masked rebel of radio reflection discussed the painfully slow HD radio rollout and adoption as our digital platform for the future. Lingering questions about the long-term viability of HD continue to dog our business. The larger markets have mostly all converted, but the total is only about 14% of all stations. Most uncommitted station owners are still reluctant to spend the money and the resources to add HD, uncertain that their investment will ever pay off. Let's break down the uncertainty and shed some clarity on how far HD has come and where it's heading. Stations started transmitting HD for evaluation and testing over a dozen years ago. The HD transmission standard was formally adopted by the FCC in October 2002. Since then, according to Ubiquiti, about 2,100 stations have added HD, including about 1,800 FMs, with 1,300 separate HD2 and HD3 channels. By comparison, the latest FCC data indicates that there are a total of 14,600 AM and FM stations in the country, not counting LPFMs.
The major stakeholders in this technology, including the early adopting members of the HD Radio Alliance and the committed car companies, have hunkered down and stayed the course. A lot of us have not been happy with the proprietary standard aspect of the adopted Ubiquiti platform or the high licensing and royalty fees both broadcasters and radio manufacturers are being charged. Unfortunately, that's the price we had to pay to play digital radio in an era when a private company develops a mission-critical product and corners the market. We need to realize the general model of adopting a technology innovation as a standardized platform is not all that different from most other industries. FMHD continues to grow, but it's no secret AMHD is struggling, with many of the 250-plus converted stations choosing not to operate HD at night. Limited data capacity with few feature enhancements of real value, plus irresolvable interference issues, have seemingly killed the promise of a technically rejuvenated digital AM service. At least those stations that have added AMHD got the added benefits of new transmitters and optimized antenna systems. The stations that have persevered and made AMHD work as a valued addition to their product will be along for the ride as long as AMHD decoding remains in the FCC-adopted standard receiver chipsets. The additional channel bandwidth and adjacent channel guard bands for FM have allowed FMHD to offer a much richer feature set than AMHD and escape most of the dreaded interference problems. The early promises made for FMHD suggested that our primary coverage contours would be served with the improved quality of digital using only 1% of the total transmitted power. Car radios in unobstructed terrain almost delivered that promise, but we've since learned that effective digital coverage of 1% in most markets achieves only about 60 to 70% of the analog coverage. Early versions of portable and tabletop HD radios came up especially short. It wasn't that long ago when many pioneering engineers who installed HD systems on their stations had a difficult time finding HD radio models that would reliably play their new signals inside a home or office without the aid of an external antenna. Many of the HD receiver manufacturers have stepped up to attack this problem by improving their front-end designs, including better filtering and shielding to keep internally generated digital noise from desensitizing the radios. Solving the puzzle. Thanks to those ongoing receiver improvements and the excellent work of NPR Labs, which pushed the supplemental HD 2 and 3 channels and increased HD power initiatives, a lot of the initial disappointment over HD performance has abated. Increasing digital power from 1% of the total power to 10% of the total power has been demonstrated to improve digital coverage significantly. That factor by itself may be the missing piece that will make HD FM stick long term. About 300 U.S. stations are running increased HD power levels now, mostly in the 4% power range. That level appears to give digital coverage parity with analog. Even at 1%, very few reported incidents of noticeable analog self-interference have emerged. The HD power boost is proving to be a welcome enhancement for the reliability of HD2 and HD3 channel reception. Quite a few station clusters are now leveraging some commercial success with these additional program services. Many of those include extended coverage, especially at night, for their AM news, talk, and sports stations, but it also provides minor league and extended major league sports franchise deals and various foreign language services in major population centers. Even music-branded stations are developing unique niche formats that can super-serve target audiences that become very loyal and supportive when they discover them on an HD radio. Lots of flavors and colors. HD naysayers and opponents have warned from the beginning that if new HD receivers didn't catch on quickly and sell in big quantities, the manufacturers would stop making them and abandon the technology. That has not happened. A few of the early models have disappeared, but receiver and car radio companies continue to build and introduce new HD models in increasing quantities and at lower price points. There are now more than 15 automakers building the technology into more than 85 different vehicle lines, and more than 100 HD radio receiver models are available at more than 12,000 retail outlets nationwide. According to Ubiquiti, 12 million HD radio devices will be part of the national landscape by the end of 2012, with many of these sporting larger color displays. It seemed like it took forever to cross the 1 million mark reached less than 3 years ago. The multimedia color displays now appearing in many new car dashboards not only include navigation packages, but also a host of new glitzy features that offer internet resources, along with the enhanced visual features of HD radio, driven by PAD and other data. The HD radio artist experience is one of these. This summer, we'll begin to see digital radios with large color touch screens showing up even in economy models of cars, with the Volkswagen Jetta being the first, and a number of others in early 2012. The new Ford Edge was previewed at the NAB show in April with an awesome HD radio system built in, with sync and a large color display all standard. These next-gen HD radios will display album and commercial artwork as well as station logos. The artist experience, along with other HD visual features like real-time traffic maps and iTunes tagging, allow radio to look and feel more like many of the new internet destinations folks will be dialing up on their car dashboards. We simply need to provide the same level of eye-popping content variety and excellence to stay competitive in that space. The battle for the dashboard. Most car radio companies don't want to build old technology into new cars or additional radio chipsets just to support legacy products that will be going out of style. It's no secret that radio is being squeezed by other interactive multimedia resources consumers want to see available on their car dashboards. The simple reality is that radio needs to keep justifying its right to claim a big chunk of this incredibly valuable ergonomic real estate in cars. HD radio as a consumer experience, for those who aren't aware of it or haven't been seeking it out, will be much like discovering RDS. They buy a new car and voila, the RDS scrolling text and the HD radio with all its extra features are just there. Once they get turned on to the enhanced features of HD in the car, they'll want to buy portable and table radios with those same features. Public awareness of HD radio admittedly has been disappointing and slow to pick up, but the increase has been accelerating in recent years. The 2010 Edison Research Study shows it in the 40 to 50% range, although many still confuse HD radio with satellite radio. 4 years ago, the penetration was only 10%. In 2007, according to a BridgeRatings.com report, only 1% of consumers polled said they were interested in buying an HD radio. Edison shows 7% are now very interested in HD radio, although this has remained about the same for the last 3 years. Clearly, we still have a lot of work to do. Sirius XM eventually will raise its monthly rates now that the three-year deal with the FCC to allow their merger is expiring. A recent settlement of a lawsuit by subscribers only delays an inevitable increase. Meanwhile, wireless internet subscriptions for cars will no doubt start growing and hitting consumers' pocketbooks. It should become even easier for free over-the-air radio, including HD, to exploit our zero-cost advantage. New and creative methods for stations to justify and afford converting to HD have been introduced. In case you missed it, Citadel Media offers radio stations Ubiquiti licensing and HD transmission equipment from major manufacturers in trade for spot inventory. It's a partnership deal Ubiquiti and Citadel unveiled last fall as a way for smaller and cash-strapped stations to add HD. Change is in the air. So, is HD radio really worth the effort? If I were a station owner committed to keeping my business viable and profitable going forward, I don't think I'd want to rely on analog-only radio to sustain me. Nor would I succumb to the hype that ubiquitous wireless internet is right around the corner and expect my internet stream and website to take over and replace my air signal for the entire audience. If you're worried about the internet completely replacing traditional over-the-air radio, it's going to be quite a while before that's likely to happen. And even with the technology and the necessary supporting infrastructure advanced sufficiently across the country to make that possible, there will be an associated cost to acquire and maintain the service. Many consumers will not be willing to step up and pay the freight as long as free alternatives remain. I'm comfortable letting future generations of station owners deal with that entire issue. Technology continues to change, and the market dominates the time and the need to make the right decisions. For today and the immediate future, let's stay focused on providing and selling compelling content on every delivery platform we can harness, and it won't matter which one the listeners choose to receive it. And that article was written by Guy Wire, a pseudonym for a veteran broadcast engineer, and it appeared in a recent Radio World News magazine. This is Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service.
Thanks, Mark. Also like to thank Bruce Winkleman, Dave Alpert, Phil Wayne, Tom Winston, and all of you who contributed to this edition of the DX Audio Service for July 2011. We'll see you in 30 days with more DX stuff. Remember, get out and support radio.
Sing a little song, don't sing it through. So long, we never been wrong. Listen to the ringing harmony. Listen to us singing perfectly. Sing a little song,
you might sing it wrong.
So wrong, you might sing it wrong. Blame it on WIBC.